Right. Hello and welcome to episode 35 of the Reptile Chat podcast. Not only is it episode 35, it is the first episode of 2024. So happy new year to you lovely, lovely lot. I hope you had, I hope you enjoyed the madness that was December and the 12 pods of Christmas and the great big fat Reptile Chat quiz of the year. There's a lot changing here. Me personally with the reptile keeping. So if you've listened way back to episode 19, where Paul Monitors kindly co-hosted the episode, you will know a little bit more. I'm going to do an update at some point soon, don't know when. It won't be a podcast episode. It might be a standalone YouTube video if I can be bothered to venture out into the YouTube space. I'm not sure if I want to or not. We shall see. If you do want to go and see it, though, go and check the link in the description. At the top or near the top of the description, there is a link to Patreon where you can join the Repti Squad. It helps me out. Help support the podcast. You guys get exclusive looks. If they're pre-recorded podcasts, you get to see them before everybody else does. And I may or may not have some merch coming soon as well. Anyway, that is enough of me plugging myself because nobody wants to listen to that. I will do a quick... I don't know what the word is. Let's have a look through comments quickly, see who's here, and then we will get our guest on. So who's in the comments? Paul, yes, this is alive. Fiona, are there subtitles available normally? Hey, Dan. Hey, Michael. Who else have we got? Laura is in the chat as well. So she will be in the comments as well as chatting to me. And last but not least, by any means, Mr. Early Gang himself, Viv Visions, is also there. Right, so that is the shout outs done, I guess. So, my guest is out there in the green room, waiting very, very patiently. So, it's about time we should introduce her. Today's guest, the first guest of 2024, is a little bit different from my usual guests, but one that I think is going to be a really great episode. So without any further ado, let's please welcome Laura from Dead Set Company. How are we, Laura? How are you there?
I'm good. Hello. Hello. I can hear you.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So, thank you very, very much for coming on. Sorry about the little start there. I forgot that I got myself a new intro and I got excited about watching it.
I was like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah, that's a brand new one for 2024. Anyway, that's enough of that rubbish. So, thank you very, very much for coming on. I think I'm going to start today's episode with a little bit of a trigger warning, possibly, because...
Yeah.
I've got no doubt that we're going to sort of discuss the ins and outs of sort of taxidermy and preserving animals and things that have passed away. So if it's not your sort of thing that you want to listen to, please thank you for tuning in, but probably best you guys come back next time. But for the rest of you, we're going to get stuck in, really. So if you haven't listened to the podcast before, I like to start the podcast off with a section that I call Get to Know. It's basically this or that questions just to get the to get to know the person a little bit behind the social media account. Mm-hmm. For regular listeners, I've had a bit of a change up for the questions for this year. So let me know in the comments what you think of the questions. And Laura, if you're ready, we will get started with the questions.
Yeah, fire away.
Fantastic. So nice and simple. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Snakes or lizards?
Snakes.
Frogs or salamanders?
Salamanders.
Nice. Centipedes or millipedes?
Millipedes.
Spiders or scorpions?
Oh, spiders, I think.
Nice. Birds or butterflies?
Butterflies, given.
Yeah. Grasslands or woodlands?
Woodlands.
Beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Hot climate or cold climate?
Cold.
Nice. And the most important question of the entire podcast is, what is your favourite biscuit?
It's a rich tea.
Oh, what, just a standard rich tea? Or are we talking rich tea fingers?
Standard rich tea, just
nice.
McVit is as it comes. Love
to
it.
Fair, I like a rich tea, but you have to be careful when you dunk them because they do not last long.
It's a one quick dunk biscuit.
Yeah,
there's no messing around with them. But
you've got to be quick.
Yeah, they have been my favourite ever since I was little.
Right, so that's broken the ice a little bit, and I quite like the new questions for 2024. Yeah. So I've done as much research as I can.
Okay.
But to be honest, there's a lot of stuff that I don't really understand. So I'm not going to pretend that I know really anything at all. I think it's best that I don't even try and understand it, and you just explain it to me and listeners. So I've got a sort of some questions lined up. We'll go through them, and then we'll just see where conversation takes us, really.
Yeah, sounds good.
But I think the best place to start is, could you give us like a history of Laura? Where did your passion start, and how has it sort of blossomed into what where we are now?
Yeah, so I started the business, I think it was about 5 years ago now. I started off part-time. It was a hobby. And it started from a very sort of weird place. I'm actually a qualified accountant by trade, and I was working in accounts, and I started making these displays. The first thing I ever made was the domes with the butterflies in. And I didn't set back then. I used to purchase them preset, but I always put the display together, and I made one for a friend for Christmas, and people loved it, and I started making more. I started doing some really small shows, and it really just sort of blossomed from then on. I eventually went part-time with my previous career, and then just before, probably about 6 months before COVID hit, I took the plunge and went full-time. And over the last 5 years, things have sort of slowly progressed. So I did my first tarantula for Christoph at Tarantula Room.
Yeah.
He contacted me and said, you know, I've seen what you've done, blah, 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 do you give it a go? And I'm like, literally don't know what I'm doing, but yeah, let's do it. And it turned out great, and I was really impressed. And then somebody said, oh, can you frame a malt for me? Again, don't know what I'm doing, but yeah. And then I actually got into the hobby side of it more, started learning about it more, and that's when I learned to pin insects, and then I sort of progressed my skills from then on, just from, like, you know, research and knowing a few people in the hobby and whatnot. And it really has just naturally blossomed over the last 5 years. And, you know, I went into COVID hit and I was like, that's it, business is done, you know. And it went the other way. I had time to push my online presence. I had time to learn and, you know, and obviously more people were online, so more people were looking for you. And I was, you know, posting the groups a lot and things like that. And then obviously we came out of COVID and all the shows started up again. And I think they obviously gave me quite a bit of a push. And then I won the awards that I've won 3-4 years in a row now. And that's obviously made quite a big difference as well.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, what awards have you won?
So I won Most Original Artist in 2020. Seems like forever away now.
It does seem a long time ago.
Yeah. And then for the last 3 years after that, I've won Taxidermist of the Year for Yorkshire. So it's not UK-wide, in fairness.
That's still cool. I didn't even know that was a competition, to be fair.
Yeah. So the first one, somebody nominated before. Still no idea who it was. So I got nominated, and it's like a panel of judges. Every year it's a different panel of judges as well, which I think is really interesting because it gives you a bit more sort of feeling of accomplishment when you win multiple years, because it is a completely different panel of judges. And they've got to have, I think it is at least 10 or 5 to 10 other applicant people in the categories for it to be a category. So yeah, so that's really cool. And that obviously made a bit of a difference, I think. And obviously, it's a nice little pick-me-up, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And to be able to say you're award-winning as well, which that's just
another
cool thing, isn't it? Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, I would too.
I used to be really embarrassed by it, and I know that's really silly, but, like I never used to be able to talk about myself or the things I do, because I used to just think, well, it's just boasting.
Yeah.
And then through, you know, people and friends and my partner and stuff, they're like, no, like, you know, you've won these awards, you work hard.
Yeah, too, right.
So now, yeah, it's website, it's everywhere. I think it's on my banners at the shows and everything.
No, that's cool. I would be doing exactly the same thing. That's very cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I suppose COVID helped quite a lot of people in some ways. And That's really good. Before we get straight in, like, into the proper dead set company bits, do you have any animals at home yourself, or have you kept any reptiles or exotic animals in the past?
So I actually, not a lot of people don't know, but I actually used to be a really big reptile breeder. My ex-fiancé, first time I was engaged, was well into his reptiles. We were 18. And he got me into it. He bought me my first reptile, which was a bearded dragon, a white hypo one. My love for them just blossomed from then on. So I had the beardy, and then we got a few snakes. I remember the first animal I bred was a royal python.
Yeah, cool.
Four eggs from it, four massive eggs. Everyone hatched out. They were fantastic little babies. And then, we had, I think, something like 150 reptiles at one point. We had a whole, when we bought our house, we used the biggest room in the house.
Yeah.
For the reptiles, I had an iguana that had the full room.
That's really cool.
Iggy, yeah, she was, a beast. We had a boa. We had a lot of common things. Pictus geckos, leopard geckos, things, and we had a few more. We had like horned lizards and all sorts. When we split, I ended up with another reptile keeper, and we bred things like red eye crocodile skinks.
Okay, that's really cool.
One of the first people in the UK to breed and successfully raise the young.
Yeah, and there's still not many people doing that now.
No, and all it was is we had Tick and Tock, which is ironic now, thinking of TikTok.
Were they named after TikTok, or were they named after the crocodile?
Before. My ex-partner at the time named them, and I don't even know why you named them that, but they were well caught, and we ended up breeding them, and we had a three or four successful generations out of them. Two of them went to a college, like a reptile college, for breeding with their stuff. And then a lot of people might know that I do actually do the social media for the IHS now as well. So I'm still very much within the hobby, and I still have, I have a little sand boa, Kenyan sand boa.
Yeah.
Male. He's horrible, if I'm perfectly honest with you. and I recently got my other half a little royal to raise as his first.
Oh, nice.
So she's very cute. She's a little, yeah. She's like a little pastel or something. So we've just got them now. I used to have a few tranchers, but to be honest, they've got older, they've matured out, passed away, and I just have not really got any others since. So I've been in the reptile hobby. I mean, I'm 29 now, so just over 10 years.
Yeah.
And obviously stay within it with obviously the IHS and stuff. So
no, that's cool. It's nice that you can have those connections and you're still part of it without having to worry about having 150 animals at home to feed.
I couldn't do it now. Not with the business now. It was a full-time job, and things like that. And I think space-wise now I have four dogs and things. So it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. I haven't got anywhere near that many, but we've got three dogs as well, and it's really hard just managing the bits and bobs that I've got, plus the dogs,
and the children,
and my wife, and everything.
Yeah.
that's cool though. So it's nice that you got a bit of experience in everywhere and whatnot. So let's get into what the people are here for, which is Dead Set Co. So that is your business. Like I said, I don't know a lot about it. I might use the wrong terminology, so if I do, please correct me. I won't be offended at all. But first off, I suppose, what is it exactly that you do? Because I keep referring to it as taxidermy, but I'm understanding that's just one of the skill services.
I suppose so. Like, taxidermy and entology is a very broad term. It is really there's so many aspects of taxidermy, there's so many aspects of entology. Most people would just call me a taxidermist. That's what I refer to myself as, and you have to fill in your car insurance and it asks what you do. And they always ring me up and go, "I'm sorry, you what?" And I'm great, here we go. I think that effectively is what I do. I do a lot of different things. I do the bone work now, skull cleaning, the insects, which is still a huge part of my business, and the wet specimens. But it all sort of loosely, broadly, sort of falls under that taxidermy bracket.
Right, okay, no worries. And all of these services are, from what I understand, or most of them, are available for anybody that has sort of lost an animal, is that correct?
Yeah, so, obviously, there's so many different options because it really does depend on what your preference, what you like, what you don't like, and also sort of the animal itself.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do probably 50% of the work I do nowadays is pet commissions.
Okay.
A lot of it is still the framing and the domes, which are
Yeah.
like the bare basics that I've always done. And then there's a little bit of the resin side, and then there's the wets and the skeleton work. The skeleton work's a more recent
The
thing.
skeleton work is really cool. I was looking, you've
Yeah.
got is it a mole on your shop at the moment that's
Yeah, he's
framed?
just sold. He got to his new home today. She sent me a message. So,
That was really cool. I
yeah,
really
he
like
was
that one.
really cool. He cleaned up really nicely. I've got them all. I've just listed the ram skulls.
Yeah.
Although two out of three have already sold. Oh, and I've just done this little garage's little snake.
Oh, that's really cool.
Like my beer thingy.
Yeah.
That's a commission.
That's fantastic.
His base and stuff. So yeah, it's a more recent sort of thing that I'm doing, and obviously it's very time consuming. So it's
Yeah.
something that I don't do super often, if you get what I mean. It's sort of a couple of year type thing. I've done like a few snakes and things, they take forever.
Yeah,
So
no, there's a lot of little pieces. So if somebody wanted to use your services for an animal that's passed away, how does it work? So do they pop it in the post? What's it? So imagine one of my pets has died, unfortunately, and I've gone, oh, I want to have it preserved, regardless of the way I want it preserved. What's the process to get it to you?
Yeah, so most people opt to post. Some people bring you, I don't know if you know, but I do a lot of shows around the UK. To be honest, from January till December nowadays.
Yeah.
So I am around quite a lot. So some people do bring to the shows. Like, I've got some people bringing some stuff to see's a couple of weekends away. But most people opt to post. So they would obviously, let's say your tarantula passed away, you'd message me, say, tarantula passed away. And then because obviously I do so many commissions now, and having the same conversations multiple times would take a lot of time my day.
Yeah.
The website I've detailed out sort of there's a pet services couple of pages, and there's like, your options for frames and domes, how to post, how to store, time frames, things like that, just to give somebody that time to digest that information.
Yeah.
And then obviously, get them to me. Detail sort of what service to use and when, and put a note in the parcel so I know it's yours, because people do
Yeah.
forget that one quite often. But yeah, so I try and make it as simple as I can for people, really.
Yeah. So if, say, if I was to wake up tomorrow and I'd lost one, unfortunately, would, before contacting you, should somebody, like, are we putting it in the freezer to keep it all right? Or are we fridging it? Or are we just leaving it?
No, freezer is 100% the best place for it. And I know some people struggle with that aspect because, it is your pet, and I get
Yeah.
that. Some people will message me, like, they'll get up in the morning, find a trans, like, can I post it today? And I'm like, that's fine. Freezing is great because there's two reasons I ask people to freeze. Obviously, you don't always know what something's died of.
Yeah.
And if there's anything lingering or any springtails or anything like that, obviously it'll kill them off. So that's the sort of one part of it. And the other part is it just sort of freezes them in that state, because tarantulas especially, their abdomens, they do go funny quite quickly. So it's really important to sort of stop or slow that decaying process. And like, the fridge would be fine for like overnight, but freezer really is the best thing. So like, I'll say to people, like, freeze it how you're going to package it. I think it's a
Yeah.
really good way of putting it, because then they can literally grab that. A lot of people use cricket tubs because if they've got tarantulas, they feed
Everyone's got
it.
cricket tubs.
Yeah, or locust, whichever. A bit of tissue in it, tarantula in or whatever, pad it round, can't get thrown around, bang that in the freezer, and then all you have to do Monday morning is, pop it in a box, put something around, put your name in it, and post it off,
Yeah,
so
okay.
you're not faffing around then.
Yeah, that's fair enough. There's a couple of comments coming up here. I'm just going to pop them up on screen quickly. Viv Visions is asking, are you attending the Bristol Invert Show?
I am at Bristol, yes.
There you go. So, Ken, you can go and say hello to Laura there. And then there's a fly bugging around. Michael is saying, oh, man, those Rams goals, with some emojis, and he's saying one day soon. And I think, I know Michael has said he loves the stuff you've done. And I think he said he's got some of your work as well.
I think he does. I recognize his name.
He does. There's a comment further back. Let me go and find it quickly. There we go.
Yeah, I do recognize his name.
So he says, love Laura's work. Had a commissioned native butterfly frame from her before, plus the deer cap in his Kimberley rock monitor Viv as well. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, there you go. So, yes, she is at Bristol. And if you have unfortunately found a pet that's passed away, pop in the freezer.
Yeah, pop in the freezer and either message me or just go straight on the website, see what you want, and then just literally be like, look, I want this. Can I send it off? I always tell people to message me first, though. I don't want to get a surprise post.
Imagine you're on holiday or something and there's just like,
I mean, you know, I don't go away super often, but, you know, it's like, I've had it today, something arrived that I wasn't expecting, and I'm like, I'm like, oh, God. But, yeah, I always say to people, even if you check the website, please just drop me a message, just so I've got a heads up, you know, just in case that I do happen to be.
Well, that's fair enough.
Going on today.
If you're happy to go through it, I'd quite like to sort of go through the ins and outs. I've written in my sort of notes of each process, but I imagine there's lots of different things. So I'd quite like to do a couple of things. If you're happy to talk us through the ins and outs, that'd be really cool. So the first one I want to go through is wet specimens, because it's something that fascinates me. And I know that you do it to the same like grade that the Natural History Museum would.
Yeah.
So, well, if we run them all through from start to finish, so let's go with a royal python for the sake of things. So I've sent you a royal python. It's arrived at your house. What is the process?
So obviously, if I was doing it straight away, because obviously it's already thawed out, the first process is you've got to do, so the way I do it, which is the same way like Natural History Museum and stuff do it, is you inject and soak in formaldehyde. Formaldehyde, for people who don't know, is a tissue fixative. It's used for embalming, so it's literally the same idea around it. You're injecting them, you know, you've got to make sure you get a good amount in there, and then obviously they're going into a jar, so the position you put them in that jar is the position they're going to be in for forever.
Yeah,
they will not change.
And in the jar, do they stiffen up, or are they sort of like?
Yeah, so it's weird. So they're like rubbery. That's literally the best way I can explain it. So they're not like hard. So you know, if you squish them, I wouldn't advise it. By the way, people, you can, you know, and they will always retain the shape. And it sounds really morbid, but the way you know that like a snake is fully fixed is if you took it out of that jar and like stretched it out, it would bounce straight back into that position you've put it in, and that's know that it's fully fixed. If it returns, because they'll still be soft in the sense that you could, I'm not recommending people start pulling the wet specimens out and stretching them out, but you could move them slightly and they will always go back to that original shape, and that's how you know, that's a really good indicator that they're fully fixed. And the size and the weight of whatever your wet specimen sort of determines how long they stay in that formaldehyde for.
So do you have to change the formaldehyde?
No. So once you've injected and put them in the formaldehyde, they stay in that until they're fully fixed. When they're fully fixed, I'll take that out, give them a wash with distilled water, and then fill with 70% isopropyl. And the only real job of that isopropyl is to not only keep it wet, because it's a wet specimen, they will dry up. If you left them out of fluid, eventually they would dry up. But it also is obviously 70% isopropyl. It's a natural it's a disinfectant. So it just keeps bacteria and anything like that out. Because at the end of the day, whilst they are fully fixed and they are fully preserved, obviously mold and things still exist. So that's really the only job of the isopropyl. Plus, so back in the day, and a lot of specimens in the Natural History Museum will actually still be kept in formaldehyde. but it's carcinogenic. It will kill people. So obviously it's not safe. So that's why. But because once they're fully fixed, they don't actually need to stay in it. But a lot of museums opt to keep them in it because that original formaldehyde you used has a lot of like DNA and specimen, and you know, because obviously at museums they're preserving it exactly as it is. They want everything to do with that specimen, and that's why you'll often see them in like Naturalist Museum where they're all kind of, like yellowed and orange and red, you know, like. And I
With
always
that
say to
old fish
people,
tank water.
yeah, it looks a bit grim because they don't swap it out, and there's a reason for that because it's educational. Whereas obviously in the more hobby trade, we put them into isopropyl because it doesn't need to be in the formaldehyde anymore. It's safe for people, but it still does the job. And then, and it can yellow over time, you know, don't get me wrong. I've had some specimens for 5 years that are still as clear as the day I put them in. I've had some that I've had to change it a few times, but you know, washing it out and changing it isn't a big deal.
Do you
And
have
that's
to, sorry, do you have to, like, for want of a better word, empty the animal before you inject it with formaldehyde?
No, so that's the thing with wet specimens, you are literally preserving the animal whole.
Right.
So this is what I say to people. So some people like will prefer to keep the animal exactly as it is. And reptile sort of mounting, like traditional taxidermy, isn't really a big thing. It's not really a very commonly known trade. And it still involves removing parts of the animal, obviously, and replacing that as you would with normal taxidermy. Whereas wet specimens, everything is still there. So I've just actually preserved an adult royal that died of being egg bound. And you can still see the eggs in her. And they will stay in her, you know, it'll keep that shape and it'll stay like that. So yeah, they literally stay whole exactly as they are. I won't cut into them, touch them, just inject them, and that's it really.
That's really interesting. I'll just a couple more comments whilst we're here. So Viv Visions are saying, would you ever do lizard skeletons? And I've actually
I've done
got,
some.
yeah, I've just if I can remember how to do it, I've been on your Instagram.
Yeah, there'll be a few on
So,
there.
hopefully, is that on the screen? I don't know.
Oh, something's happening.
Yeah,
Yep,
there we
there we
go.
go.
So,
There's me. Oh.
there, Ken is a chameleon. So, yeah, there we go. That answers the question, really, I suppose. Do you
Yep,
do a
that
lot?
one's
Do
a
a lot,
chameleon.
lot of them?
Yeah, so I've done quite a few chameleons actually. Chameleons have been a really popular skeleton build for me recently.
Just, they're really, it's impressive actually, like the we've seen the cask and stuff above its head.
The you know, obviously, I mean, I didn't know a huge about chameleon skeletons before I did my first one. They are super fragile. They are really, really difficult to sort of preserve, because the rib bones are just so fragile and so thin. You really do have to be delicate with them, and obviously they've got these really cool head shapes. And I think a lot of people don't realize that is actually bone
I've got a chameleon, a Yemen chameleon at home, and
with a
I had
fatty
no
deposit.
idea there was bone inside
Yeah,
that.
it is actually bone. Yeah, so that gap in obviously the top, that's where the fatty deposits sit. And similar to like bearded dragons, you know, where they get those fat bits on the heads, it's a very similar thing. That's where they store all their excess fat and things. So a good sign of a sort of healthy chameleon is obviously having a nice fat deposit there. But yeah, so I've done a few chameleons, done a few bearded dragons, and I did some monkey-tailed lizards for Taryn. He used to own Bioactive.
Monkey tail skinks.
I did a pair of his monkey-tail skinks, which he's actually got in a vivarium. He's got in a
Oh,
bioactive
wow.
vivarium as a bit of a it's a bit of a test, because I'm like, I don't know if anything bad will happen, and he's like, I don't know either. So
There's a couple more questions coming through regarding
yeah, cool.
the lizard. So we've got Michael, who's on screen at the moment, saying, how are all the bones attached?
Glue, literally. It's
Just as straightforward as
not
that.
anything that crazy. I mean, depending on how I do the specimen, with chameleons, I actually leave a tiny little bit of the tissue still, the connective tissue, so obviously not like the normal skin and stuff, and that will keep it a tiny little bit attached. Then I'll go through and use glue to secure any other bits. But yeah, it's not anything that sort of out of there really. It is just a bit of glue.
Is it just, I presume, like a super glue? It's not anything fancy.
Yeah, like super glue, modeling glue. Because obviously super glue has that like shine to it. So you can use like modeling glue and things like that. Just any sort of strong bonding glue.
Okay. And then
somebody told me the other day that they use nail glue. Not really sure how well that works, but
I have no idea. Yeah. And Fit Visions has asked, how do you get it down to the bone?
So this is the bit that I won't obviously go into like super, super detail.
Go into as much detail as you want.
It is, so obviously they come to me, I will take all the skin off as sort of close to the bone as possible without damaging it, take out the organs, which is always the most fun part. Although I've got a really good knack to it now, I'm getting a lot better at it, getting them out in a full...
Was that fun, sarcastic, or it is actually nice?
It depends. Obviously, like, some people's pets die of diseases and things, which obviously can change the internals. So I skinned a bearded dragon that had been put to sleep, and it was actually completely orange on the inside, which was really bizarre. Why? And I messaged her. I said, "Lucky, do you want to see?" You know, obviously, I asked because I don't want to the insides of her animal. But I said, "Like, do you want to see it? It's really interesting." And she's like, yeah, and it was completely orange. And she said to me, oh, well, he had liver failure. So it's potentially either liver failure or the drugs. But it stained the whole inside of him like a yellowy orange. It was really bizarre. And like I've done snakes where they've had like fatty deposits down the side of them and stuff. So you do sort of, I've started as a bit of a side thing, learning, you know. I'll sometimes message somebody like, how did it die? You know, out of curiosity. And they'll say, oh, you know, so-and-so. And then from that, I can look at the insides and be like, oh, that makes sense actually. And I might sometimes message them and say, oh, well, if you're interested, you know, like it did have some, there was some internal bleeding or, you know, these sort of things. So it depends how they've died. You know, if they've had a bit of an internal issue or they've fallen. I've had a few where the geckos have fallen, sadly, when they've got a bit older. Obviously, it all gets a bit mashed. So that's never as fun. But I am getting a bit of a knack of it. And then, you have to, you know, you do have to take the eyes out and the tongue and things like that. You basically, the idea is to take off as much of the non-bone parts as possible. Yeah. And then it depends on the animal, really. Some smaller stuff, I will literally sit and cut off all the flesh till it's literally down to bone and then give it a clean up with peroxide and things. The bigger ones I'll rot down. I have had flesh-eating beetles before.
Okay.
I don't currently have them in this house, right? I moved to this house just over a year ago now, and it is a full renovation job. We got it quite cheap, so managing a colony of flesh-eating beetles has just not been on my mind. But on my TikTok and maybe on my Instagram, there is a video of them eating a duck.
Okay.
The bones, yeah. And I did a little close-up magnifying thing for people. But yes, I've used them before. They're quite good, but they are a little bit high maintenance. You have to feed them like any other pet. So if you've not got any sort of skeletons and stuff for them to eat, you can feed them like dog food and all sorts. Because my dogs are raw fed, so we just throw a bit of thing. But they'll only eat dead flesh and meat, so you're sort of safe, you know.
I suppose you could get like pinkies and rats and stuff like you would feed.
Yeah, literally whatever, anything dead with meat on. But the only problem is, and this is where my job clashes a little bit, is that they will eat dead insects.
Okay.
So the reason I haven't got them in this house is because at my old house, I had a separate shed and they lived out there. They were heated because I needed the separation. I couldn't have any in the house because they would put my own personal collection, but obviously other collections at risk. Now, I do routinely spray in my office and my collection because you can get like a taxidermy spray. But obviously it wouldn't be very wise to have them in the same room. And we don't have a building here yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the only part of my job where I've clashed a little bit, and it's been a bit of a like, oh, is it worth having them? You know, like the anxiety and the stress. But you know, they're really interesting, fascinating things, but yeah, they will destroy your whole collection if you're not careful.
Yeah, that's mad.
Yeah. Which is why I say to people, I do before they leave with me, I do give them a quick taxidermy spray because it does last, you know.
Yeah.
But it just gives them a bit of extra protection, really, more than anything.
That's fair enough. So whilst we're talking about how you're getting down to the bone and things like that, and there's another comment. I don't know if I saw it or not. No, don't worry about it. I'll come up later. So because we have this chameleon on screen, we'll talk about that one. How long, roughly, would it take you to, like, get the bones prepped? Because you're sat there saying, like, you're pulling the flesh off the bone. I'm thinking, when I eat a chicken wing, I can't get a chicken wing clean. So how are you with all these tiny fiddly bones, and how long is it sort of taking you? Like, let's use the chameleon as an example.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I mean, the funny side note is I can strip a chicken carcass really quickly nowadays and very efficiently. So I'm a good person to know in a zombie apocalypse. But honestly, like a chameleon, you're looking maybe half an hour of me sitting there and stripping as much as I can off. And then it's sort of there's two sides, really. With like the chameleons, I use the method of picking off as much as I can and then using the peroxide to clean because the bones are just so fragile.
Yeah,
and that can take a couple of days because you'll sort of put it in the peroxide, take a look, take some more flesh off, put it back in, and you know, keep repeating that process till it's clean. Whereas the other method of like maceration, which is putting in water and using bacteria, that will completely dissolve all connective tissue, meaning you just end up with a pile of bones. And that includes the skull. Like the skull for that snake head I showed you was in more pieces than I even thought a skull could come into one. All the plates and everything, they use connective tissue. So once that's gone, you do end up with a super clean skeleton, but it then takes a really long time to put it together. But you don't. It depends on the animal. Like snakes, you have no choice but to do that. Which is why they take so long to build. And I say to people, you know, snakes are probably one of the most expensive things I do, because they have so many ribs and vertebrae, and it's not like, you know, they have a very progressive size difference.
Yeah.
And you really have to sit there and look at it, you know, like with a chameleon and stuff, they sort of start off smaller, get bigger, go smaller again. Fine. Whereas with snakes, and same for the ribs, you know, they start off small, but then like they'll tiny, tiny little differences till they get bigger. And if you mess that up, it's really noticeable. So you sort of have to lay it out, check it, you know, and things like that. So it is very time consuming. You know, the more you do it, the quicker you get, in theory, to a point. But yeah, I usually put aside about half an hour to sort of skin a chameleon sized.
Okay, that's to be fair. That's not as long as I was expecting it to say. I thought you were going to say a few days.
No, I'm quite quick now. I mean, it used to take me a little bit longer than that, but yeah, I try to sort of just sit and really focus on getting it done. You know, some bits are a bit hard, like getting the skin off the skull and stuff is a bit tricky, but it's not so bad.
It is brilliant. It's something. It's a bit morbid, but it's definitely something I'd like to have a go at. If you know what I mean, like. But Michael has asked.
If you can stomach it.
I think I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, that's usually people's biggest hurdle. You know, it's can I stomach it? Especially when it's your pet. So I've actually got my bearded dragon that I was telling you about. I've got his skull.
Yeah.
I didn't clean it up. I didn't have the heart to do it. I got somebody else to do it.
I can see it being difficult. Like I used to go shooting quite a lot. And we used to, like, rabbits and things. Like, I can skin rabbits. I'm quite happy to take them to pieces that are usable for food and then the dog and whatever. But I've never gone down to the point of like stripping it down. And then I've never taken an animal apart with the idea of me putting it back together afterwards as well.
Because you effectively are, to be fair.
Michael has asked, how much would a commission work like that cost? And he was talking about the chameleon. The same sort of size lizard, chameleon.
So chameleons are charged $160 for plus display, because that'll include like a standard display, like on a stake, on a base. If you want like a glass dome, for instance, I do just add that on, because especially with like chameleons and stuff, they can be like 20, 30 quid. So it's up to people what they want to pay and what they can afford as well, you know. So you know, with a chameleon, you're looking anywhere from sort of 160 to 220 as a base
As a
example.
base
There's
drop.
it changes a little bit, you know. I do the like the little metal plaques, they're like £10 and stuff. And if you wanted something, like I always say to people, like if you want something really specific that I don't just have, I just charge what it costs to get in, you know. It's
Yeah.
I'm not I've charged what I need for, you know, the sort of chameleon side of bits and stuff. But, you know, adding like I added like some like fake mushrooms in for somebody, you know, I just charged a sort of the cost and I think maybe £1 on top to cover me putting them in or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's, and I think Baileys generally tend to be the same price. I did one in a really long frame because she wanted him completely flat. So, you know, like tail straight and everything. I think that came in at like 180, 200. It just depends on the materials a little bit. You know, like if specific frames cost more and, you know, things like that. But yeah, it's generally a good base. And snakes do start at 200 because they're just
There's a lot of
take.
fiddly bits.
Yeah, it's just the time, you know, like they really are. Like the stripping and the cleaning and then the putting back together especially is really,
Yeah.
you know, where that time constraint comes in, you know. And if I'm spending 4 days putting a snake together, you know, I need to cover that
Well,
time,
it's a lot of
obviously.
hours, isn't it? One more question from Michael, and then we
Yes.
will go on with it. He's really into this. He messaged me a couple of times saying he was really looking forward to this episode. He
Yeah,
has
nice.
asked, could you do just a lizard skull, and would the person need to send the whole animal or just the head?
Yes, I can do the skulls. I do a lot of skulls, because it's obviously a cheaper option for a lot of people. And not everybody wants the skeleton, which is
Yeah.
fine. It's totally up to the person, you know, like one of my good friends in Scotland had a Burmese python, and I was like, posting a whole berm doesn't really make sense.
No.
So he did take the head off. I've had people who just want a crested gecko skull, and I'm like, look, I know it's really gory. Do you want to just send me the whole thing? Because they're
Yeah.
not that big and not that heavy. So it really is up to the person. You know, if they're comfortable or want to or would rather obviously separate it, they
Yeah.
can. If they want to send me the full thing, I'm really not bothered because, you know, sometimes I'll say to people, like, you know, am I fine to use the skin? Or, you know, do you have an issue with me turning some of the bones into jewellery and stuff? Because
Yeah.
there's bits and bobs you can do, and you know, some people are fine with it. I say to some people, do you want me to bury them? Because I have like a little bit of a like pet burial area in the garden. You know, because obviously, or I say, like, you know, do you want it returning? Some people do.
Yeah.
So it really is, I'm flexible, you know, to people. Like, I've done quite a lot of like skulls in little jars. I've done a few necklaces. I did a crested gecko necklace. And I've got that big snake skull there, which is going on like a nice little plinth and stuff. So
Yeah.
yeah,
Oh, that's
I'm
so
quite
cool.
flexible.
Yeah. And just a question that's popped into my head. Is there anything animal wise that you won't do? Is it insects and reptiles, or is it animals as a whole? So like say
No.
frogs maybe, or what
Yeah,
else would you?
I have a friend who keeps a lot of frogs and toads, and every time I see her, she's like, oh, my friend gave me this to give to you. She forever is bringing me frogs. And I always used to complain about how slimy they are, because like toads especially are really slimy and
Yeah.
I hate it. So I do a lot of frog wet specimens. They can look really, really cool. I've got one here at the moment, a little red-eyed melanistic frog.
Okay.
So that's quite cool. And I have done a few like toad skeletons. I'm working on a budgie skeleton for somebody at the moment.
Well, I bet that's really fragile.
Yeah, that one is giving me just the most anxiety ever. I actually cleaned it up and positioned it, and then I wasn't happy with the, obviously because the peroxide whitens the bones.
Yeah.
I wasn't happy, so it's gone back into the peroxide, just to whiten up a bit more. But yeah, so I've done, I'm trying to think what else. I've done loads of, yeah, I've got like a little like bird. You might not be able to see it because it's
Oh
tiny,
yeah, hang on.
tiny.
Let's if we do that for a second. There you go.
Yeah,
Just
don't.
show up again. I just made it a bit bigger so people can see. It
There
is. That's really small.
you go. Yeah, so that one was, I've done like, and I've sorted like the, so this is going into a dome for a customer with like the wings.
Oh wow.
So like the skull will be in the middle. It's something I've done for her before because that was a, I think it was like a, might have been a gold. It was a small bird that she'd found, but it died a bit too long ago.
Yeah.
So I said to her, like, you know, do you want the wings and the skull? So yeah, I'm doing that for again and putting it in a dome. So yeah, I do actually do quite a lot of birds now, actually. And like, obviously, I've got like the ram skulls, I do fox skulls. I actually did a fox taxidermy head last year.
Oh, cool. I saw you've done a wet specimen of a baby deer as well.
Yeah, I've done a few deers. I do quite a lot of puppies and kittens, which very much I love it or hate it.
Yeah.
They generally get me a really nasty message every time I post one.
I'm surprised. You think people would just go, like, surely they realise it's already passed away and it's just a way to look after it.
And I'm like, I've not murdered a puppy. You know, no, exactly. I'm not that horrible. Like, I think people have genuinely commented and I've gone, you know, I haven't killed it. It was still, I mean, the post literally says it's stillborn.
Yeah.
But I was like, it is stillborn. They're like, oh, I thought you'd killed it. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? Like, you seriously think I've gone out, murdered this puppy and then preserved it, you know?
That is mad.
And I'm just like, I have dogs, I love animals, you know? And I think people are often surprised about that because of the job I do.
Obviously, you've done a few smaller mammals. Would you do some, like, if someone approached you and said, my dog's died, would you do my dog? Would you do a,
no.
Like a, okay, so there is a size limit.
It's not just a size limit. So I do puppies. I do puppy wet specimens quite a lot, actually, because, you know, breeders or people will come to me and say, you know, my puppy's passed away or it was stillborn or whatever, you know, but I really want to preserve it. I don't just want to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's because we have this attachment to, obviously, dogs and cats quite a lot. You know, we sort of humanize them a little bit.
Yeah.
But I often find... And I do know some people who do, like, kitten or cat taxidermy mounts. I just often find with adult dogs and cats, it just never looks right.
Yeah.
Because, and the way I explain it to people is obviously, like, we have, people have pets, cats, dogs, you know, whatever. They have very distinct personalities. I have, for example, two border collies. They are sisters. They're littermates, which people are always like, oh my God, are you mental? They
especially
are. Yeah, I know. That's a story in itself, but was not planned. But they are so different in their faces, in their personalities. And I just feel like, for me personally, you can never replicate that.
Yeah.
I have done a dog skeleton for somebody before, and I've got one coming in soon. The only problem is, like, for larger things, I am a little bit constrained on space.
Yeah.
So some people, I mean, I've had some people, like, bury them, and I explain how to do it, you know, so you're not losing bones and things. But when it comes to, like, preserving them whole, it's always a flat no. I've done, like, the skulls, though. I actually collect dog skulls. I've got quite a lot of them. Yeah, I'm fascinated by them. Mostly sight hounds. I have two sight hounds. And I just, yeah, they just fascinate me, all the different ones. We've got, like, a German Shepherd, I've got, like, a Burmese Mountain Dog and stuff, so, yeah, really, really awesome.
Wow.
But, yeah, I just find, especially, like, with the older ones, they just, as whole, they just don't look right.
No, I know what you mean, because, obviously, like, even, like, the way dogs look at you, like, they frown or they have certain emotions, like, you can see it. And it always reminds me of, I don't know where I saw it. I can't remember if it was on TikTok or somewhere, but there's, like, a bad taxidermy museum.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
And all these animals look absolutely ridiculous. And if I'd sent my dog off to someone that came back looking some of the animals from there, I'd probably cry.
And, well, this is the other thing, you know, as a dog lover for myself, I like cats as well. You know, I feel like, me personally, and a lot of them I've seen, like, if I got that back, I'd be like, oh, it's not the same, you know? And I just feel like that emotional connection we have with them just doesn't quite get replicated, especially in dogs and cats. It's different with things like birds and insects and stuff, because whilst they do have personalities, I think they're a lot less emotive in their facial positioning and shapes. Like,
yeah, I mean, I know what you mean.
Birds literally, you know, they can't frown at things, you know. But with dogs, you know, they just do these certain things. So, yeah, there's definitely certain things. I mean, I have done really weird things. I preserved somebody's placenta for them recently.
Wow, yeah, that is really weird.
Yeah, as somebody who hasn't had children as well, first time I'd ever seen one.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God. It was wild. It was a big learning experience. Yeah.
I wonder what they're going to do with that. They can't have it on the mantelpiece, surely.
They literally have it as a wet specimen in this really pretty jar.
Wow.
It's wild. You know, obviously there's a lot of laws and stuff when it comes to humans, but as long as you are returning them to the owner, it's fine.
Returning the body part to the person it belongs to.
Yeah. But yeah, that was wild because I haven't had kids. So I was like, you know, it's not something I Google. What does a placenta look like?
Yeah. No.
And then, yeah, but she was over the moon. I was like, okay.
Well, as long as she's happy,
try it out and other bits. But yeah, that was definitely one of those things where I was like, wow, okay, this is where I'm at in my career now.
Yeah. That's wow. That's not something I was expecting to come up today, to be fair, but there we go.
Posted it on my page for obvious reasons. I feel like I will really have a cult of people coming for me then.
Yeah, no. So on your website, I was having a look, and you've got something listed on the website as curios, and I googled curios, right? Mm-hmm. And that I cannot find a definitive answer to what that is. So I don't know if I was just googling the wrong thing, but what is a curio or a curios?
No. In taxidermy world, curios and oddities are like little bits, like the butterfly wing domes. I do.
Yeah.
It's basically a term. It doesn't really have a meaning, I suppose. But it's basically a term for those little bits that you collect. These little collectibles, like shells and like just bones as themselves, and these little domes and stuff. They're all like little oddities, little curios that are just these little items that don't really have a place or another word for them, effectively.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense.
So yeah, it's just a terminology that we use sort of in the taxidermy world. That I think once you know what it means, it makes a lot of sense.
No, it does make perfect sense. Yeah, I googled it and I was like, that's definitely not what that is. Like, I can't remember what it was coming up with, but it definitely wasn't what I was expecting it to be. So I thought I would ask the question. So obviously, if this isn't your typical, typical hobby or now job, but if somebody wanted to have a go at starting to preserve something or perhaps do a wet specimen, because I know there's a few people in the comments chatting about wanting to have a go at doing their own wet specimen.
Yeah.
What would your advice to them be? Where can somebody start? Because I presume it's not something that is particularly easy accessible, but at the same time, it is if you know where to go.
Yeah, yes and no. There's a few things I say to people that some people think it's cheaper to do it themselves sometimes. And I often say to people, like, I'm not trying to gatekeep or be rude, but I promise you now it isn't, unless you were going to continue doing it, because there's a lot of costs involved. There's the safety equipment, for once, because formaldehyde is a very dangerous chemical. You need specialised masks, specialised filters, you need goggles, you need gloves, you need needles. And actually, it was a little bit more accessible before, like, Amazon and eBay and stuff banned the sale of them. You know, you have to get them from specialised medical places. You have to buy them in bulk now, which is really annoying. You need syringes, and obviously, you know, the chemicals themselves and stuff. And it is just a case of some stuff you get from eBay, some stuff from Amazon. You have to go to medical suppliers. Some places require you to have a business. You know, especially for things like formaldehyde. I mean, I picked up 25 litres of formaldehyde recently, and I had to sign a little form and give all my details over because, you know, it is a controlled, dangerous substance. And obviously there's the other side of it, is safely getting rid of it as well, because it doesn't last forever. You do have to replace it. But, you know, you can't just pour it down the drain. Well, you can, but you shouldn't. And that's it, really. And it is something that if you do it wrong, it will go wrong.
Yeah, you know? And I suppose if someone's having a go themselves, they are. It's probably a pet that has.
Yeah, and I always say, don't want to ruin it. Please don't do it on your own pet. Please, if you've got no experience, because whilst it could go right, there's a high chance it probably won't. We all had to learn, you know. Yeah. We all had to get somewhere, and I don't want somebody to message me in 2 weeks' time and tell me it's ruined or ask if I can fix it, because I probably can't at that point. Because if it's started to rot because it's not been injected right or enough, or it's not soaked long enough, that really is it. you know, there's lots you can do. If people wanted to have a go or try and get into it, I'd just say to people, please do research. Please don't message me and ask me, because I don't have time and I'm not trying to be rude. It is just a case of time, you know.
No, that's fair enough. And you've got a business to run as well. So if you're telling everybody how to do it, you're never going to make any money.
Yeah,
so.
I'm not going to make any money, and that'd be really bad business practice.
Yeah,
there is a lot of information online, genuinely. And I am looking at things of doing classes and talks later down the line once I'm settled in the house a bit more and we've got more space. Because I'm not trying to gatekeep it. A lot of people do it, you know, and there's a lot of information online. But some people prefer to learn in person or online or things like that. You know, I'll be talked through it, and that's fair enough. But, you know, do your research. Really do your research, you know. Please try not do it on your pet the first time, because if it goes wrong, I really don't want somebody to be upset. And just, it really is important to get that PPE. You know, you have to get filters rated for formaldehyde. A dust mask is not going to do it. I heard of a girl who had to go to hospital recently. You know, when you buy these chemicals, they'll give you a sheet and say, you know, don't bring it in, don't drink it.
Nobody reads the sheet.
But nobody reads it, do they? You know, I get the sheet now and I'm like, all right. But I know what I'm doing, you know, and it really is a dangerous chemical. Same for the isopropyl as well, though, to be fair. I've got a friend who's a taxidermist, and he was washing something in it with bare hands and actually gave himself an overdose, and he got really sick.
Oh, blimey.
So it whilst I'm not trying to scare people, I think people need to be aware that you are using dangerous chemicals.
Yeah.
And whilst it is a fairly straightforward process, there is a lot of learning there. You know, like I say, bigger things need to wait longer or need to be injected more. You can also over-inject and they look really weird.
Yeah.
But then you can under-inject. So
that's a good point.
It is something you have to learn. You know.
So there's a comment from Paul here. He's been chatting in the chat, and I know he has got a couple of. He's got a baby Aki. I think he's got a two-headed Aki and a two-headed Kimberly Rock monitor hatchling in his freezer that passed away a while ago, but he didn't know what to do with them, so they're in there. And I know he's looked into it and wet specimens, and he's saying that he thinks these are too small to inject. So is that a thing? Because you were saying you can overdo them and stuff.
You can get really fine needles. I always say to people, like, it is really important, no matter how small. I mean, I have literally injected hatchling Rankin dragons that are, you know, I don't know, a couple of centimetres big. You can get really, really fine needles. And whilst they might not get much inside them, it is still really important to do that area. Yeah, I've done hatchling corn snakes. It is fiddly. It is difficult. But it is still really important, because you can just soak them, but they're never going to preserve right. And whilst they might last a really long time, they also might not, you know, and that's the sort of risk. I've got a few two-headed things in my own collection. I've got a two-headed corn snake, a two-headed Rankin's dragon, because the girl said you can only have it if you're going to keep it. And I'm like, no, that I want it. I want it for my own collection. Like, don't worry, it's not going anywhere. So... like I say, you can get away with it, but it is really advised. I mean, the needles are in weird, like, measurements. I can never remember what they are without having them in front of me, but you can get really, really fine ones.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, they are literally, like, pinpoint fine, just to get something inside them, just because, obviously, like, they're not going to be drinking the formaldehyde. They are dead.
Fiona is saying in the comments, so what she's hearing is leave it to the professionals. I think... that's what I'm getting for the most part as well, definitely.
Yeah, I don't want people, I think people misunderstand sometimes, like, oh, you're gatekeeping or you're not allowing people to try it. And it's not about that. Like I said, there is so much information online. And to an extent, if you actually read what's on my care sheets and stuff, you can actually probably work out what you're doing.
Yeah.
And there's people who've done YouTube videos and things as well. It's just, you know, it probably won't be cheaper. That's the main thing I always say to people. Like, I know people have this idea that, oh, well, you know, you're only injecting it with formaldehyde. It's not just about that. And as far as I know, most people don't have, like, formaldehyde-rated filters hanging around, just laying around in their house. Yeah. But, yeah, you know, it is something that once you know what you're doing, it is fairly straightforward. But, I wasn't amazing at it. The moment I picked it up.
No, that's fine.
Just and like positioning and everything. People say, like, did you get it into that position? I'm like, yeah. You know, there's little tips and tricks and things you learn over the way. But you know, you have to position them and stuff. But if people want to have a go, by all means, just make sure you really do read up onto it. You know, that's the most important thing. And be safe.
That's great. There's lots of comments coming on as well. This is the last question I'm going to ask on the comments about pricing, because if people want to know, they can DM you if they are serious. But Michael and Paul are both asking the same sort of question. So how much would you be charging for a hatchling wet specimen? And they're both talking about sort of baby monitors or baby pink tongue skinks that are all about the same size.
Yeah, like little bits, yeah. So when people usually come into Matt, I just say you're looking 10 to 20 quid plus postage. And that includes the injecting, the thingying, the wash, and the first wash through of alcohol. You can legally post a very small amount of the alcohol without having a specialised licence. Yeah. So for some of the smaller bits, I can actually post it with that first wash of alcohol. Probably will go a bit gross and you'll want to change it, but it also might not. Just because that's the first wash through of getting all like the remaining formaldehyde and fluids out. So any of the little bits... Some are a little bit more, like I think I did one that was like 25 because they wanted a really specific jar that I had to buy in that cost me like 6-7 quid. So obviously I added that on. So it does depend on the jar. But if you just wanted like one of the, I'll tell you what, I'll reach this one because it's hand reachable away. If you wanted like one of the really standard size jars, so this is like a little vial with a little frog in it, you'd be looking 10-15 quid, you know, for a little hatchling. Because I do try and keep them reasonably priced.
To be fair, I was expecting you to say a lot more than that, so I think that is very reasonably priced.
Yeah,
and hopefully that answers the questions that are going on in the chat. Well, I don't want to be asking you all the... otherwise, we'll be there all day just doing quotes.
Yeah.
Fiona is saying that she would be very interested in classes, as is Paul. And to that, I would be interested in class as well. That would be really cool. Paul, one more question. I'll be sending that stuff. How do you send it? Paul, we did comment. We did go over that right at the beginning of the podcast.
It's pretty much the same as insects. So have a little look on the pet services bit, and there's a bit of like package and posting. It's the same basis, you know. Post it frozen, post it next day. So, yeah, check out that link.
Yeah. Somebody else, I think it was Michael again. Let me find it. where's the question? There we go. So, this was something that I hadn't got in my notes because I forgot, basically, but I actually would want to cover this as well. As long as you're all right, because we haven't gone for an hour, but if you're happy to keep going, I'm quite happy.
Yeah, I'm fine.
So, Michael has said he's debated trying pinning before. So, obviously, pinning, there's no injecting or anything. So, perhaps if somebody wanted to try, this is maybe somewhere better to start. And I know that you do a lot of pinning.
I do a lot.
So where would be a good place to start with that? And whilst you're explaining that, I'm going to see if I can find an example on your Instagram.
So on my YouTube, there is a tutorial, actually, on pinning. I did a female Atlas moth that I'd bred. Pinning a freshly dead specimen is always easier than pinning out a dried out one that you've got to rehydrate because they're just a lot more flexible. So I breed a lot of deathhead hawk moths, done a few Atlas moths, things like that. It's a much easier place to start out. Obviously, there's still costs involved. You know, the pinning boards, pins, the paper for holding the wings down. Some people use glass, actually. I don't use that method. Some people use tweezers to move the wings, some people use pins. There's a lot of different ways, for argument words, to skin a cat, you know, as the term goes. And, you know, that's for like butterflies and moths. For things like mantises and beetles and stuff, you can do it without the setting boards and stuff, just on like polystyrene or cork. So it's a much more accessible thing. The one thing I will say is that I destroyed a lot of specimens when I first started. It takes practice. Don't get me wrong, I've never known anybody be amazing at it.
Yeah.
From the get-go. It is something, it is a skill, you know, but it is a skill that can be learned. I was very lucky when I started out. I got chatting to an older entomologist. He's been doing it since he was 16. We're actually very, very good friends now. And he was like, here's some setting boards, here's some pins, and here's some old specimens. They're already damaged, feel free. And he gave me those things to help me get going, which was really incredible. And I must have sat for like an evening every single night for weeks pinning them out until I had the confidence and the skill to do what I do now.
Yeah.
And now I actually do it to relax, which seems really bizarre. But, you know, it is a skill that is learnable. You do have to have a delicate hand. You do have to have a steady hand. But it is one of those things where you can adapt it to work for you. And when I do TikTok lives showing, because I do TikTok lives pinning.
Yeah.
And I'll chat to people and stuff. Somebody will go, oh, I do it this way. I never thought about doing it that way. You know what I mean? So it's definitely one of those things that you can adapt to work a little bit better for you to in an extent. And you can, the one thing I do say to people is not everybody is ethical when it comes to buying dried specimens or specimens in. Just really check where they're getting them from. Yeah. Some people breed and sell them. Oh, that's a shield mantis that I did for somebody. You know, but some people, there is still people out there who still, like, there is still Chinese sellers and stuff who are catching and killing. And it's just important if they don't list how they get it to really query that.
That's understandable.
If, you know, if you are conscious of the ethics. And I mean, I've sold kits and stuff in the past. I do want to put some more together. It's just obviously having, I'm not a wholesaler, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, I've put kits together of like seconds butterflies, as I call them, ones that are already a bit damaged. And I say to people, if you want to have a go. They're already a bit damaged, you know, and see how you get on.
Yeah, definitely. To be fair, that is something that I would be really interested in buying. I'd like to have a go at something like that.
I'm going to put some more together with like, maybe like, because I actually make my own setting boards. You can buy them. There's like Emtology suppliers.
Yeah.
I prefer to make my own because you can make them to any size and specification you want then. But you can buy them pre-made, obviously.
Yeah.
But I also think about putting like little mini setting boards in, some, you know, getting people some kits. So it's just one of those things that I really want to work on this year. You know, so people, even if people are just interested in having a go, like they don't want to make it into a job or a hobby or anything, those things, you know, they just want to see, you know. And I've had people then comment and go, oh my god, I actually really appreciate what you do now. And I'm like, you know, it's a skill.
No, yeah, that's brilliant. So I'm going to keep an eye on your website because I want to buy a kit when they come available.
It's definitely my plans for this year. It's just last year I was really focusing on other things, and this year I want to focus on, you know, the sort of like somewhat more educational bits.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, there's a lot of people in the comments that would be interested in doing classes as well. So I'm sure if you decide to go down that route, there will be lots of people. I will definitely be up for doing that. That's something that's really very interesting, to be fair.
Yeah, it's a good way of getting to know people as well, I think. And you know,
definitely. So we've been going for just over an hour, and I think we could sit here for probably another hour, but I am going to start wrapping it up. It's been a very, very eye-opening episode, and I feel like I've learned a lot. The comments have been going off, like there's a lot of comments.
People are
obviously enjoying the chat as well. So it is time to wrap up the episode. There are there's two more questions that I'm going to ask before we wrap up. There is a change for 2024. So today will be the last episode ever with the RepChat Hall of Fame. And I do have a new question for 2024. So you're getting double bubble. So you're getting Hall of Fame and 2024 question.
Okay.
So Laura, imagine you've walked into a large museum type building. On either side all the way along are lots of pedestals, and on these pedestals are items that my guests from previous episodes have put on their item. This is the RepChat Hall of Fame, and at the end of the RepChat Hall of Fame is a pedestal ready for you to plop your RepChat Hall of Fame item on. This can be an item, a piece of advice, basically anything roughly to do with the reptile world, but it doesn't have to be exactly. So what would you like to add to the RepChat Hall of Fame?
I will keep it reptile based. I would like to add, can it be an animal?
It can be whatever you'd like. Yes.
Okay. I would actually love to add a bearded dragon, and I'll explain very briefly why. For obviously it's my first reptile, so it has a very special part of my sort of getting into thingy, but I also think it's a lot of people's first reptile, and I think they get a very bad rep. But they're actually really amazing reptiles, and they can be really rewarding. And I think they still very much have a very large part of the hobby. Whilst people call them boring or overbred or all those things, I do think they're great for kids and adults alike. And I think they're a really great starter reptile if you just get the basic requirements right.
I think that's absolutely fantastic, to be honest. And like you say, they get a lot of stick for being quite boring after. Yeah. Like, biddies are awesome. And if as long as they're kept correctly, normally in captivity, they're really, really fat. So if you can keep them a little bit less fat and give them a bit more enrichment and give them like slightly bigger enclosures, they do so much cool stuff. So for the last entry to the Reptrat Hall of Fame, I think that the bidded dragon is absolutely fantastic. So thank you very much for that. The final wrap-up question for 2024. So this is the new question that all my future guests for this year will be asked. If you could give your 10-year-old self a piece of advice, what would that advice be?
It's going to sound really cliche, but, you know, believe in yourself. Believe it's possible. I mean, we're talking about 10 years ago. Let's say 5 years ago. If somebody said to me, in 5 years' time, you're going to be running a business that is successful and is your sole income, and I've gone, that's insane. No way. Yeah. You know, I had a very normal job. I had a very normal career. I was qualified. I arguably had what some would say a very stable, very well-paid career. But I wasn't happy. And it's important to be happy. You know, it's important to love what you do. And whilst it isn't an option for everybody, and I know that sucks, you know, and I know that's really difficult, there is still ways to, you know, even if it's not a business, it's still important to love what you do, be it your everyday job, or at least, you know, I mean, with HMRC's changes, not so much anymore, but a side hustle. But, you know, believe it's possible, believe you can do it. And if you really do want to do it, just go for it. You know what? It might not work out, and that's fine. You know, I at one point thought Dead Set won't work out, but the support I've had over the last 5 years and the way people come up to me and go, oh my God, you're Laura. And I'm like, hi, that's me. You know, it really is one of those things that if you just want to do it, just give it a go. If it don't work out, it's fine. So what? No, you know, do something else.
Yeah, fantastic. So, Laura, what an awesome episode. Great start for 2024, and I've really, really enjoyed it. If anybody wants to know any more about Laura and Dead Set Co., then there will be some links to her socials in the show notes below. Yeah. But as she did say, please don't bombard her with loads of messages saying, how do I do this? How do I do that?
Yeah, I'm not trying to be rude, because I probably will just say I have a Google, because there is loads of information on Google, you know. But as a quick plug, there is a lot of stuff on my YouTube. I have done some in educational stuff. I do want to do more. I do TikTok lives where you can have a chat with me and stuff. So, you know, I'm not completely saying no, just please don't send me a 24 paragraph message, because I'm probably gonna go, oh my God. You know.
So brilliant, thank you very much, Laura. I'm gonna kick you out of the screen for a minute, but do hang around because we'll have a quick like debrief before we go. But that is it. So if you want to say goodbye to all the people, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for chatting and all the questions and stuff.
No worries. I've absolutely loved every second.
Really awesome.
So let's do that, and we shall finish up. So thank you all for tuning in today. I absolutely love that episode, and I really hope you guys did too. Everyone in the comments are saying they loved it, so that is brilliant. If you're still here in the comments, please remember to go and give it a like and a thumbs up, and go and drop a proper comment on like the YouTube thing, because the live comments don't stay. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I do have a Patreon available. It opens up to a private Discord where you get early access to extra content, pre-recorded episodes, and there is also some merch on the way. That's that. I have been Ben McIntyre. This has been the Reptrat Podcast, and I will see you in a fortnight. Till then, bye-bye.